There was a time not too long ago when the Israel and Palestine question remained the most pressing in the Middle East, if not the entire world. It still feels a little strange to think that the decades-old conflict has been relegated down that list by events in Syria and Iraq. And while the world's attention has been elsewhere, the spread of Israeli settlements across the Palestinian West Bank has continued, supported by a growing Israeli right wing. Anthony Lowenstein is a Jerusalem-based independent journalist, filmmaker and author. He's the author of Disaster Capitalism, Making a Killing Out of Catastrophe. And he spent time travelling across the West Bank, meeting the settlers and trying to understand their way of life. And he joins me on the line now. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, the idea, when we hear the term settlers, you're thinking of the old Wild West and people living under canvas and kind of trying to hack out a living in the wilderness. That's not quite how these settlements are.
It's not really. And in many ways, the term is kind of incorrect. I mean, we all use it because it's almost a catch-all phrase. Settlers really mean any Jewish people who, after 1967, when there was a six-day war and Israel took control of the West Bank and Gaza, have colonized the territory. They've built homes, they've built settlements, they've built huge communities. Some people live in trailers, some people do live in tents, but most people live in houses. With electricity and water and all those infrastructure. But we should also say they're all regarded as illegal under international law. Yeah. And in fact, every country in the world, except Israel, regards it that way, including the US, although the US, of course, funds and assists that process.
How are they living there without harassment? I mean, do they have to be protected everywhere by the Israeli Defense Forces?
Absolutely. I mean, the crazy irony here is you have now anywhere between 600,000 to 700,000 Israeli settlements. I'm talking about, this is areas in East Jerusalem as well and the West Bank and also elsewhere. So huge numbers of people. And they are protected in huge areas by the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces. Now, in some areas, there's more threats than others. But the truth is, if those soldiers withdrew tomorrow, many of the settlements would be under threat. And that's because, as I spent time in this story, Newsweek, which I think you're referencing, mm-hmm. other reporting I've done for the last 10 years or so in this area, that many of the Palestinians in these areas who are living in their own communities, who have been there for generations, are being abused by settlers. They're being kicked out by settlers. The sewage flowing from settlements is going in to Palestinian villages. So it's not surprising that many Palestinians feel completely upset, frustrated, angered by the entire process, and rightly so.
Now, the number of people living in the settlements, both in East Jerusalem, which of course is a city, but in the along the West Bank, I mean, there are full towns, there are factories, there is manufacturing in these settlements.
Absolutely. And in fact, I spent time in this story in one of these industrial areas. Industrial area here means Israeli factories employing Palestinians to make everything from toilet seats to products, which are then sold within Israel or also internationally. Of course, many Israeli companies, though, are now finding it difficult to sell some of their products, including in Europe, because of a growth of something called BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, where a lot of activists in Europe and the US and elsewhere are saying we shouldn't be buying products that are made on territory, which is occupied illegally. So I spent time with some of these Israeli companies who are feeling that financial pinch. They are saying that, in fact, they're upset and frustrated that growing numbers of European areas and towns and shops are not selling their products. Which I think is an interesting development.
Now, what about the argument which you also discuss about Palestinians working in these Israeli-owned factories, settler-owned factories, and how it distorts the local economy in the sense that Palestinian workers may well be paid better in an Israeli yeah. factory than being able to earn similar elsewhere?
This is almost a classic colonial situation, isn't it? When you think back to apartheid South Africa, there were examples of blacks working in white areas because there were simply no jobs or very few jobs in black areas. It's very, very similar here in the West Bank. Unemployment in the West Bank and Gaza is through the roof. And to be sure, some Israeli factories are providing jobs to Palestinians and they often will want to have some employment. However, there's a really growing move within Palestinian communities themselves to not just not take those jobs, but also protest against them. In other words, They are in some ways, for example, often working in settlements, building the settlements themselves. In other words, they're building their own destruction. They're building settlement homes next to their own villages because there are no other jobs. And in fact, it's just the last few weeks, I'm working on a story at the moment about these checkpoints. Some listeners may have heard of these checkpoints that are all around the West Bank. Palestinians need to apply for checkpoints to go for different areas in the West Bank. They need to apply to get into Israel to work because unemployment is so high in the West Bank. And what Israel has done over now 50 years, and we shouldn't forget, 2017 will be 50 years since the occupation began. Yeah. 50 years is not temporary. 50 years is permanent. So many of these Palestinians that I spoke to are so desperate for work that, yes, they will take jobs in Israel or in settlements or in his industrial zone.
Now,
they're pretty upset about it, of course.
The reason they are there, I mean, obviously some of the land is very, very good. It's wonderful land and you can grow your vines or whatever you want to grow food of various kinds. But how much of it is about economics and how much of it is about fundamental religion?
I think it's a few things. I think we should not forget that not all settlers are fundamentalists. They're not. There is a vocal minority who are religious fanatics who actually advocate and want a religious Taliban-style Jewish state. They're fanatics, to be sure. But a lot of people are settlers, are there, Jewish settlers, for cheaper housing. For example, when many migrants come to Israel, Jewish migrants, they are given cheap housing and opportunities in the West Bank because land and housing is much cheaper than in, say, Jerusalem or Tel Aviv. So that's true. But we shouldn't also forget that the problem routinely is that in many parts of the West Bank, Palestinian rights are not given the same as Jewish rights. In other words, I'm a Jewish Australian and I'm living in Israel as a journalist. I have more rights to get Israeli citizenship than a Palestinian whose family was maybe born here and have lived here for generations. So if you're a Palestinian living in the West Bank, you live under military rule and all that means, military prisons, military laws. If you're an Israeli settler or, for example, an Israeli who visits the West Bank as a tourist or a worker, you have civilian rule, civilian law. So it's two very clear different systems depending on your background and what sort of person you are.
And it does, therefore, sound like apartheid. Absolutely. Talk to me about the politics of all of this. I mean, the solution that has been advanced as the potential for ending this conflict is the two-state solution. But if you have Israeli settlers in these lands, occupying them illegally, it is at best going to frustrate the two-state solution, at worst make it impossible.
Well, I think it is impossible, and arguably ever since it was first discussed to have a two-state solution, which was in a formal sense in the 1990s with the Oslo Agreement when Bill Clinton was US president, that the plan of many within the Israeli system, politically, militarily, and the settler movement, is to make any division of the land impossible. So today, it's theoretically possible you could split the land in two, an Israeli settlement, Israeli territory and a Palestinian land in theory, but the problem, of course, is in practice that, as people often argue, the settlements have made the West Bank like Swiss cheese, and that's been a deliberate plan. For example, the separation wall, which Israel has built, deliberately runs straight through Palestinian territory, Palestinian villages. So what I think now many Israeli elites, this is in the military, the settler movement, believe, in my view mistakenly, that they can continue this almost indefinitely. Forever is a long time. Forever is forever. But for the foreseeable future, there's virtually no international pressure to change. As you said in your introduction, the Middle East has fallen apart. Egypt is in appalling shape. Syria has disappeared as a country. All these nations are falling apart. Israel-Palestine, in some ways, is seen as a less important issue. However, 2017 is going to be a pretty key year. 50 years of occupation, and what many people argue is either a one-state solution or a binational state or some kind of federation, a various different forms of solution, which ultimately have to be decided by Israelis and Palestinians. But within Israel itself, the Israeli Jewish population, there's really no pressure to end the occupation. I should, one important fact a listener should know, regular polls of Jewish Israelis find a vast majority don't think there's even an occupation. So if you can't even acknowledge that there's an occupation literally down the road in the West Bank, how do you even begin to address it? So there's a complete cognitive dissonance now. And I see this with many Israelis that I meet. And in fact, in that Newsweek cover story that we were talking about, many Israeli settlers, some are fanatics and some are less so. For them, there's no occupation. For them, the land was given to them by God. It's written in the Bible. And therefore, they have the right to be there. And Palestinians are the interlopers. Palestinians are the ones that need to leave. Or if they accept being there, they need to live under Israeli rule forever. And not surprisingly, many Palestinians, in fact, the majority of Palestinians, don't accept that. Now, how that plays out in years to come is hard to see, but the Palestinian leadership, the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, Hamas in Gaza, are both utterly useless and corrupt bodies, tragically for the Palestinians. And the result, therefore, is it's almost like a leadership vacuum within the Palestinian body politics. So it's a mess.
Anthony Lowenstein, a Jerusalem-based independent journalist, filmmaker, and author of the book Disaster Capitalism: Making a Killing Out of Catastrophe. Thank you very much for joining us.